This is my journey. Inspired one story at a time, a library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I am your host, Steve Anderson, and today's guest is our first ever return guest in Jeff Ostrowski. This is a deeply personal episode. I hope you can really appreciate how brave and how authentic Jeff Ostrowski can be during this interview. It's long, but near the end, hang in there because he talks about some really deep feelings throughout the entire interview, but also near the end. I want to say that I've asked Jeff to do this twice. And the fact that he's willing to share with all you listeners his deep personal feelings about what he's going through with a very, very, very serious stage 4 pancreatic cancer diagnosis is almost beyond me. But I knew he would share it. I knew that he would just come forth and educate us and help us learn what someone has to deal with when they go through this. Jeff is an amazing role model. He's been just a fabulous physical therapist leader in our profession, and what he's dealing with right now is unbelievable. And it's just so touching to hear what he has to say about his wife, who's been right there with him the whole way. Gosh, if we can, if everyone can have someone like that, it just makes life so much better and so much more wonderful. So he's got a great family support system. He's got a lot of good friends, and he's going through hell. So it's just amazing to hear his response to some of the questions that I asked that are deep, and I pushed him to probably go deeper than most would want to go, but he answered them without hesitation and really shared with us his journey. So enjoy this episode. I think you're really going to like it. And as always, let me know what you think about it through reviews or contact me personally. Welcome to the program, Jeff. I appreciate your time. And you have the honor of being the first ever return guest on Profiles in Leadership. So how about that?
Well, I'm honored to be on the first time, so to be the first second timer is really something, because you've had just some extraordinary guests on, so it really is an honor, Steve, and I love your podcast.
Well, thanks so much. It's really been fun to do. Now, we talked about just about it 13 months ago. Your first interview on Profiles in Leadership was released back in July of 2019. And that was about 4 or 5 months after you received that just horrible diagnosis of stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And I believe you said that diagnosis was on 2/12/19. So I just think it's interesting. Now we're about 18 months out from that, and it's been a whole year since we've talked. And how you doing? I mean, what's the last year been like?
It's been I don't know, it's been a wild year, some ups, some downs, probably more downs than ups, to be perfectly honest with you. But I'll just kind of give you the brief history here. You had it right. I was diagnosed February of 2019, February 12th, 2019, stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Within a week or two of that, I started on chemotherapy. I had 21 total chemotherapy treatments in 2019, and we can talk a little bit more about those if you'd like. Last one that I had was December 17th of 19. At that point, I was an opportunity came up to enter into a clinical trial at the University of Pennsylvania, an immunotherapy clinical trial. I started on that just right at the end of January, and then I spent February, March, April, May, and June in that trial, things went pretty well, you know, through most of the trial. Toward the end of the trial, I had an adverse scan result that showed a slight increase in the size of the tumor, and I wasn't feeling, you know, I wasn't thriving at that point either. So based on those two pieces of information, excuse me, my physician advised that I leave the trial, and that happened, you know, in early July. At that point, you know, I thought my only option was going to be to go back into chemotherapy, which I wasn't thrilled at all about, because that was pretty heinous existence. But because I didn't, for about a year, actually, I didn't have any signs of any metastatic disease, which I had, you know, in the original diagnosis, of course, was stage four. But there hadn't been any evidence of that for about a year. So the chemotherapy really worked to, you know, put those hotspots out. So they thought the radiation would be an option for me. They normally wouldn't advise radiation with stage four because, you know, the radiation can treat the tumor, of course, but it doesn't treat any systemic disease that's going on. But since I didn't have any evidence of that radiographically, they thought it was worth taking a shot at radiation. I was very enthusiastically agreeable to that. So just today, I had the sixth of 15 radiation treatments. So I've got, you know, nine more to go after today. When you do the radiation, Steve, you do it. You do radiation and concurrent with an oral chemotherapy drug, much, much lower dosage than the infused chemotherapy drug that most of us think about when you think about cancer treatment. But nonetheless, those drugs, I mean, there's no free lunch with any of these treatments or drugs. And, you know, that evokes, you know, some of last year's feelings of sickness and so forth that comes along with chemotherapy. It's not anywhere near as bad, but you know, I'm kind of dealing with that now. So anyway, we'll see where this takes us. I'll finish this course up in a week and a half or so, and then get scanned again, you know, maybe 6 weeks or so after that. And hopefully it's, you know, it's worked and we've kept the other disease at bay, and I'll be able to, you know, delay any further treatment for who knows how long. We really don't know at this point. So that's kind of the summary.
And getting back to the clinical trial, I mean, I know that you did a lot of research to pick the right one, and you had a lot to think about and choose and so on. And so it sounds like that was that failed. That must have been disappointing. So what do you think it helped in the treatment at all, or do you think it just it was just a good try and a miss?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I think it. You know, for 5 months or so, I didn't progress. You know, and progress, for those who are not familiar with that term, so when you progress, usually you think you're kind of you're moving in the right direction. But when they talk about progression with cancer, it means it's getting worse. So that's a key point for everybody to understand. Progression means worsening. So for 4 or 5 months there, I did not progress. So, you know, perhaps the immunotherapy, you know, did something to help me just tread water there for a while. Just a little bit more detail on the trial. You know, there's a lot of trials going on out there. They're kind of bunched into a couple of different categories. Mine was in an immunotherapy, but it was also what they call a targeted therapy. So it was kind of a combination trial of immunotherapy and a targeted therapy. And immunotherapies, you know, what they do is they just kind of amp up your body's own immune system to help you fight off with whatever it is, you know, that you're dealing with. And then the targeted therapies are drugs that are designed to interrupt, you know, kind of specific stages in the growth of cancer cells. So I was on what they call a PARP vaccine, so the combination of those two things. So I guess they maybe stalled it. I was really hopeful that it would obviously work, and they've had some good results. I think in the trial that I was in at the time that I entered, I believe they had 45 or maybe 50. Patients enrolled in the trial, and they had a couple of complete responses. They never say cure, they just say complete response, because, you know, when you're in stage four, you don't want to ever say cure, because it sometimes there's little cells that just kind of hide in there and then rear up, you know, months, years down the road. But they had a couple of complete responses, and I was hopeful I would be one of those. Unfortunately, it didn't go that way. But those months were good. I was reasonably functional. I was able to work. I was able to work out before the pandemic hit. We were able to go out and enjoy dinners out and things like that. So it wasn't bad, but yeah, disappointing. But I'm glad this other option opened itself up, and we'll go into this full steam ahead like everything else.
Yeah, a year ago in the interview, we talked a lot about the chemotherapy and how horrendous that really was. But then you also talked about on the good days after you recovered from the chemo, you would feel like 90%, and so it was hard to even remember that you were sick. But then you would go way down that path again, So how do you feel now? You're doing radiation. How do you feel now compared to a year ago? And just as far as the general health or general feeling?
Yeah, let me just comment on the chemo and the 90% thing, because I remember saying that to you, and I said that to many people there early on, probably for the first 4 to 5, maybe even 6 months of the treatment. But what began to happen is that the sort of effects, the negative adverse effects of chemotherapy, they accumulate over time. And so it used to take me 3 or 4 days, to recover. Then it would take me 4 or 5 days to recover. Then it was 5 or 6 days. And then by the time, like November, December last year, I got here, Steve, it would take me, nearly a week to recover. And each of those recoveries, were not quite as robust as the ones before that. So when I was, I would say 90%, then I went to 85, then I went to 80, and then it was 75. So you could just see this, kind of gradual, kind of down and to the right, sort of recovery that was going on. And so I did, I just didn't see like a really bright future, continuing with chemotherapy. So I was just elated when this trial opened up. I'm just elated. Now fast forward to today, the feelings are different today. I believe what I said to you last year when we talked was, the chemo was kind of like a hangover, the flu and food poisoning, all kind of rolled into one. So I don't feel like that anymore. I just feel I have more pain now. I didn't really have pain at all last year. I have pain, in my abdomen, which if you can, I know you have a lot of physical therapists that listen to your podcasts, where your pancreas is. So pain kind of right, kind of behind my stomach, more on the left side. And I manage that with just Motrin and over the counter, things like that. So it's not terrible, but it's definitely worsening. And then the other, it's this fatigue feeling. It's a feeling of if you ran a marathon or did a triathlon, and you went out, or you did like a 50 or 100 mile bike ride, or you walked 36 holes of golf, you got that heavy feeling like, oh, I'm just exhausted. I just want to sit down for the rest of the day kind of feeling. Well, I feel like that, but then I also feel like in addition to that, for the rest of that same day, I'm carrying around 100-pound bag of rocks with me. So, to the point where like you don't even want to lift your arms. It's just an oppressive kind of always there, heavy fatigue. And it's not the kind of fatigue that you can go take a nap and feel better, or you drink a cup of coffee and you feel better. It's a different kind of fatigue. It's very hard to explain, for anybody who's never had that before.
Yeah, that's got to wear on you. And how is your mindset different now than it was a year ago?
Last year, I think I was maybe a little bit oblivious to the reality of the situation. I thought, I am Jeff Ostrowski, and I can just work my way through this and put my head down. That sort of approach, that gritty, determined approach, has always worked for me. It's all I know. It's just pretty much how I approach life, is like, let's just work our way through this. And so last year I just thought, well, I'm just going to work my way through this, and I'm strong, and it's not going to beat me. And And, you know, this year, I think it's mindset is changed. I don't know exactly how to, you know, where I am mindset wise right now. I still have the same determination and grit and hard work, because again, that's just all I know. When, you know, when I see a problem, that's how I fix it. I just try to work my way through it, you know, work harder than the next guy. Now it's a little bit of, you know, kind of things are out of your control, you know, because this disease just has a mind of its own. It's just a relentless foe. And, you know, you're in a fist fight, a brawl with, you know, this foe that has got a pretty damn good track record. And so, of winning, you know, and I just take it like, all right, this is kind of one day at a time,
and what I think about is, obviously when you first got the diagnosis, suffice to say, you're probably scared shitless. And and so where's the fear now? If this isn't too personal a question, hopefully, but are you still afraid of it? Is that fear still there, or have you come to peace with that in some way?
I definitely have not come to peace with it at all. I think the fear is real, and the fear is, you know, it's the fear, the mortality, you know, grappling with what is it going to feel like, you know, to face up to your mortality. What's it going to physically feel like? What's it going to emotionally and spiritually and mentally feel like? What's, you know, going to be, again, this is the worst part about it, is what's the kind of the ripple effect of that across, you know, my family, my wife, my kids, my mom, dad, brothers, my friends, my business partners, you know, just, it's hard to get your mind around, you know, what that is all going to be like as time goes on. Fear of the unknown, fear of pain, fear of just sickness and loss of function. And, you know, I think one of the things from an identity purpose that I've earned identity aspect that I've really struggled with is, you know, I was always the guy, Steve, that I never wanted the spotlight on me, like to be in the background, just like to help people, like to take a little bit more responsibility, you know, for things than maybe, you know, was my share. Was the guy that people would come to fix things, was the guy that always stepped up to kind of lead and organize. And I was the person who, you know, was sympathetic to other people and understanding and sensitive and aware of other people's feelings all the time. And, you know, now I'm like kind of on the other side of that. And that is very difficult to deal with, you know, the kind of being the sympathetic person. And really, that's very, very hard for me to deal with. I think that is one of the biggest unanticipated struggles that I've had in this whole thing.
Yeah, and in relation to that, you said early on when we talked a year ago that you were just blown away by the outpouring of friends and family and just people that are reaching out to help you. You know, and I'm sure your family is going to be there for you forever, but has that changed over the year? Has that kind of, you know, gone away a little bit, or is it still there as strong as it ever was?
I guess that's really insightful question, because I've been thinking about that a lot recently. Early on, there's this surge of this outpouring of love and support and prayers and well wishes and advice from all corners of the world, from, you know, my family, my close friends, you know, my professional friends that you and I have a lot in common there, from people from high school and grade school that I hadn't heard from in years and years and years. And, you know, it's very gratifying to be like, wow, man, I'm pretty happy people remember me. That's awesome. And yeah. Obviously I had, you know, some sort of connection with them, and just to see that, you know, they rallied to the cause there early on was was very uplifting and gave me a lot of wind in my sails back then. Now, you know, over the course of time, that kind of early surge, you know, kind of wanes, and it has. It never goes away. I do still continue to hear from people. It's maybe not as frequent or whatnot as it was early on, but it goes away a little bit. And you know, I think your closest inner circle of friends and family are always in touch. You know, I've got a bunch of guys. I got too many friends. I mean, I've got more friends than it's not than it should be. A guy should be able to have. So I have a lot of people that still stay in touch, and every now and then I get a text or a card or a note or some cookies or someone from someone that I hadn't heard from in a while, and it comes always at the right time. And I wanted to just note my wife Peggy. She incredible. Like, yeah, some days are just dark, Steve. I don't know how else to say it. You have days that are just dark and grim and bleak, and you know, the sky's falling and I'm gonna die tomorrow, you know, is what you feel like. And Peggy just, you know, she just has obviously we've been married a long time and just has a sense of those days. And so I'll walk downstairs and go sit at my desk and check my email or, you know, do whatever. And there'll be a card sitting there from her on one of those days where, you know, just perfect timing, like the darkest of dark days. And here's a beautiful card from her, just saying all the right things, the right words. There's sometimes very few words, but just, you know, the timing and the sensitivity and the relationship that, you know, you develop over time. Pretty incredible, pretty special.
Yeah, and for a guy who doesn't think he needs things like that, sounds like that really makes a difference when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how's she doing? I mean, you know, it's got to be tough on her. It's got to be tough on, you know, doing those wonderful things you just mentioned. But she holding up okay? Does she have her support system in place and doing well?
She's a badass. You know, she's just got, let me just collect myself here for a second.
It's okay. It's yeah. Okay. I mean, she's your rock. I know. I can just tell she's your rock. So.
Just such a big heart and just the bottomless well of love but you know, I know she struggles. I see it, and you know, she has bad days too. And sometimes we have bad days together you know, unfortunately, I'm not as good as lifting her up, feeling like crap like I do as she is at lifting me up. However, you know, she's got also a bunch of good friends and a family that, you know, are there for her too. So she's managing and you know, she's back to coaching volleyball now. Their season started recently. So she's actually, that's where she is right now. They're having a camp right now. So that's good. And then the real estate market opened back up. She's a residential realtor. So she's been doing some work there and keeping busy with that. So, yeah, I mean, I think those are good. She plays some golf with her girlfriends, and that's all good.
Well, that's what good relationships are, right? When someone sees a need that someone else needs help with, and they take on that role and they step up. And obviously, from your description, that sounds exactly what she's been doing, which, you know, you're lucky to have somebody like that, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, my next question is, how have your relationships changed? I mean, you know, you just explained a little bit, but with your wife, that you have more needs now than you probably had to before and lean on her a little harder. But what about your kids? I mean, I think we talked last time and you said your daughter would hardly leave your side for the first number of weeks after the diagnosis and someone or as before. So how is she doing now and how are the relationships changed with your kids?
Well, they're, man, that's a tough one. I think that they're just trying to cope with it, you know, right now. I just try to treat them as normally as I ever have. And I think they're kind of in the groove now of treating me fairly normally, as well. They may be a little bit kind of, you know, not intimidated, but a little bit, you know, shy about asking me how I'm doing. I think it's because they're not sure what I'm going to say to them, you know, how I'm not doing well. So I'm just honest when they ask me how I'm doing. I'm like, hey, you know, not my best day, or I was a little better yesterday, or I'm doing pretty well today, you know. But I, you know, I mostly just try to keep them pointed in a good direction with what they're working on in their lives, and keep them focused on that, and not let them, you know, brood or whatnot over me. And I think I'm proud of them. I don't think they've done that. They've done a good job of, you know, kind of keeping their lives going in the right direction. And yeah, my daughter has a boyfriend right now, so she's not spending as much time around me as she did last year. And yeah, that's good. He's a good kid. We spent a week with them down at the beach last month or back in June, and he's a good kid, so I'm glad. I'm glad she found him.
That's great. And then one of the other things you said too that relates to this a little bit is that last year you said it was hard because about 90% of your daily thoughts were about cancer, which is so annoying. And so has that changed? Are you able to, you know, think about other things, or is it just a constant 90% of the time that's all you can think about?
It's always there. I think 90% is the right number. That hasn't changed. It's, you know, it's just sort of always in the back of your mind. It's like kind of right behind your eyes, you know, all the time. There are times when I can have, you know, been distracted with whatever, playing golf or working or reading or watching something on TV, although there hasn't been much to watch the last few months. But there are some times where you get distracted, and that's kind of nice. And there are, you know, when it's sort of the old life, you know, now that I live in Pennsylvania, and the state has opened back up a little bit from the pandemic. So we've been able to go out and enjoy some dinners out recently. And that's been nice to just have a little slice of normalcy again. You mentioned the relationships before, and it's something that's on my mind about that is, it's interesting to be around people. And, you know, they obviously know, you know, what my diagnosis is. So, you know, some people are very kind of comfortable and natural about it, and they treat me just as if they always did. And then others, I don't think they don't know what to say. And I can kind of see that in people, Steve. So when I'm approaching someone or, you know, around someone who I can just get a sense that, oh my gosh, they don't know what to say. I'm making them feel uncomfortable, which makes me feel kind of bad. So I end up kind of trying to exert, you know, kind of a more positive attitude and be more conversational and whatnot with them. Cause I can see like, oh my God, they're like, they don't like the situation that they're in right now. So that's been an interesting thing, you know, because I find myself still being very empathetic to other people as a result of how they view me. So it's kind of an interesting kind of perspective on this whole thing.
Yeah, I think people are, you know, they are afraid of what to say, or if they say something, you know, that might upset you or might offend you or doesn't show that they understand it at a deep enough level. So I think there's the fear of that. I can remember with our friend Patrick Graham when he was going through his terrible health issue. And, you know, of course, when it initially happened, we're very cautious or whatever, but it didn't take long that we just started flipping him crap like we always did. And you can tell that made him feel good. So I think it's, you know, just the, you know, you want to be real, you want to be authentic with people, but, you know, last thing you want to do is offend somebody. So sometimes it, or put them into a state of sadness that, you know, you somehow created.
Yeah, that's really well put. You don't want to do that. And I, by the way, Patrick, you're right. He's the kind of guy that would like to take that crap and be good at it, and that would make him feel better. He's a good man, Patrick Graham. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, another thing that we talked about last year too, which you know, we both have a love of music, and so I'm just wondering what part has music played in your life in this last year, and have you discovered anything new and exciting that you're into these days?
Well, I binge on things from time to time, and we one of the really cool kind of habits that Peggy and I got into was we would on all the days when I could, we would meet in my basement bar downstairs, our basement bar, and right around 5 o'clock, and have a little happy hour and put some music on and share a couple glasses of good wine, and always explored around, you know, different, I love, you know, Spotify and Pandora, because you can just kind of go down these rabbit holes of music, and I would make playlists and share them with people. That was kind of fun. So yeah, music really every day. We're binging right now at dinner time on Hipster Cocktail Party Radio on Pandora. I recommend that. It's kind of cool there's some songs in there that my kids know, and then there's songs that you know Peggy and I know and like, and a lot of new songs. So we're enjoying that. And then I've always been a big U2 fan. They're one of my first loves of music. I think I started that in like 1980, probably listening to U2. You know, back in high school, college, and I grew up in a group of friends, and we listened to like Led Zeppelin and The Who and a lot of Southern rock. And so when I started listening to U2, like, what kind of crazy music is this, Jeff? No one's ever going to like this band. This is terrible. Of course, they grew up to be one of the greatest bands of all time. And I've seen seen them in concert, you know, probably a dozen times or so, but they have a channel on SiriusXM radio right now. It came on a month or so ago. So I've been listening to that pretty much nonstop. Like all music, you have these, you go in ebbs and flows. And I used to wear my U2 CDs out and whatnot back in the day. And then I kind of, for a year or two, stopped listening to them. But this channel on SiriusXM has me totally rejuvenated about U2. And I'm remembering, I'm remembering all these songs and, you know, how they align with certain times of your life. And it's just really interesting how you connect, you know, music to memories and times of your life. And this is just bringing back so many memories. I'm enjoying that. And then I also, if I'm not on XM in a car, it's either that U2 channel or I love Outlaw Country on, it's like little Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, you know, Waylon kind of Jennings. Stuff. So it's all good stuff. Yeah. How about you? What are you listening to these days?
Oh my gosh. There's just a lot of good stuff coming out. I feel so bad for the performers right now. You know, especially the ones that aren't as famous as U2 and whatever, because their livelihood depends on touring and playing shows. And when they can't do it, it's just crazy to see. So, there's a singer-songwriter by the name of Drew Holcomb that, I really like, and he and his wife Ellie, they call them Kitchen Covers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So every night they do a song from their kitchen, just the two of them, and it's fantastic. And then he put together this song called Family, which is kind of a catchy, funny little tune. And then he filmed all the different parts of his family, and one of the lyrics goes, "Kick off your shoes and dance," and it just shows all these family members doing these crazy things. And so for fun, one time I asked my son, who's pretty good at video and so on, I said, what if we could remake that? And so we got about 20 family members to send in pieces of them singing and dancing to that song. And then he edited it and put it all together. And oh my God, it is hilarious. It was really fun. So, you know, music's an amazing thing. I can just hear it in your voice when you talk about it. It's just, it's uplifting to you, and it just gives you that boost. And God, thank God we got music, right?
Yeah, no kidding. I always write. I love your taste in music, Steve. I you've turned me on a couple of things over the years. So I just wrote down Drew Holcomb, and I'll give that a listen. And so that video you mentioned, is that available for public consumption anywhere? I'd like to see
that. Actually, whoever we sent it out to said, absolutely do not share this with anyone you don't know very well. So it's a little silly, but it's great. We actually sent it in to Drew Holcomb, because he has been showing some other people have done the same thing. So maybe we'll go viral one day. We'll have to see.
Well, let me know. I'd love to see it.
It was a lot of fun. I'll send it to you. That's not a problem. Right. So, and then the other thing is, I know you're a reader, so you've been able to read. Are you able to concentrate enough to get into some good reading, or what have you read lately?
I'm pretty much always into something right now. So I'm in a book club. A couple of years ago, I started a book club with some buddies of mine. So we try to read one book every 6 weeks in that. And that's interesting because, you know, they're not books that I select. There's about eight of us in the club. So once every eight rounds of 6 weeks, I get to pick one. But We've read some really good ones. I'm in the middle of The Splendid and the Vile, Eric Larson, right now. I've read a book called Poisoner in Chief, which is a really interesting true story about, you know, kind of how the CIA developed all these, you know, crazy mind control techniques back in the Cold War, and, you know, they used LSD. That book is disturbing. Be careful with that one. What else? A book called All Be Gone in the Dark. Our friend Mike Horsfield recommended that to me. A true crime story about a serial killer out in Northern California back in the 70s or 80s, and how a kind of an amateur detective, you know, finally led to the capture of this guy just within the last year or so. That's a fascinating book. So yeah, that's they're just some of the recent ones. Read. Our last book club book was Educated, a memoir by Tara Westover. That was a fascinating story, a true kind of an autobiography.
Yeah, that is a crazy story. I read that as well.
So, yeah. How about you? What are you on to these days?
Oh, you know, I'm in a book club as well. So we read American Dirt, which was a good novel. We've recently read Little Fires Everywhere, which is kind of a good read. And we've been kind of, we got into some heavy stuff dealing with anti-racism and systemic racism and so on that we're all seeing and dealing with right now. And I mean, we had a book club on our deck a couple of weeks ago, 6 feet distancing, of course. We had people sharing things and crying. And I mean, it was one of those deep, vulnerable discussions that, you know, are hard, but are so valuable to the human experience. And it was just great. So we've been diving into some of those tougher issues because Lord knows we need to pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing that you and your group can get that vulnerable with each other. We're not there yet in my club. I love these guys but I think it takes time and trust and, you know, repetitions to get to that kind of level. So I'm not so sure how we would do with books like that. We shall see as time goes on. All right, have you been with this group for a while, Steve?
You know, it's interesting. No, we haven't. We're on our third or fourth book, but they're people that, you know, kind of in our neighborhood, we're in a newer neighborhood for us as far as permanently. And we kind of had a little bit of a tough time finding our people. And we found our people, and it's crazy when you find those people, and we got deep quick. So it's, I can't explain it other than it's been really really rewarding. It's good. Yeah,
I love that. I love that. How'd you put it? We got deep quick. That reminds me of some of our private practice section friends. I know there's something about some relationships in that group of people that, you know, I just was able to get deep quick with a bunch of people in that group. I don't know. It's just, maybe it's just good fortune or the right people, the right time, the right place, who knows, but, it's a wonderful feeling when you can get there with a group, and that's awesome for you. Congrats on that.
And absolutely. And just to go a little bit further on that, I know that it was your mastermind vision to do peer to peer, which is a mastermind group of colleagues that get together and help each other with business issues. And putting that together, I'm facilitating some of the bigger groups in that. And I was shocked how fast my three new groups this year, how fast they got to that vulnerable, deep level. And I'm sure it had a lot to do with the fact they're trying to manage through a pandemic, which no one knew how to do. But it was, it's cool to see. And it just really helps that human interaction when you can get there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to give most of the credit to Mike Horsfield for developing that peer-to-peer. I was kind of his wingman, but, it's turned out to be, I think it's got to be the coolest thing that PPS has done. And as long as I've been around, and yeah, you know, you have that, you know, you're all kind of living the same life as a business owner and a PT in different parts of the world, and it's hard to find, you know, a group that really understands, you know, the life you're living. And when you bring them together in the peer-to-peer group, and then you add in, you know, this pandemic, it just creates, you know, just an incredible kind of fast track to a deep relationship. And, you know, I'm in a group and love these guys, and they've become some of my best friends in the world. And geez, I think they'd run through a wall for me if I asked them to, and likewise, I'd do it for them.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, getting back to the books a little bit, I know that you, are interested in painting, and I think you've also dabbled in writing. So my question to you is, have you considered writing a book about these crazy experiences you're going through and sharing with others?
Yeah. You know, I that's one thing that I haven't found the wherewithal to continue to do was my kind of artistic painting and drawing, you know, that I was really getting enthused about before this diagnosis happened. I just don't manage to something like that. That bucket is empty now. I hope it comes back, but I just don't feel it. And that's something you really have to feel, you know, to do. As far as writing goes, oh boy. I do love to write, and owing to some Catholic grade school and high school, you know, nuns that I had, I think I'm pretty good at it, because they were very, very good teachers in terms of English and writing. I don't know, Steve. I just don't know if I have enough to say right now to say that I could or couldn't do that. I frankly think I'm, you know, when I listen to myself talk sometimes, I feel like I sound pretty boring. And so I don't know if anybody would really be gripped by anything that I was able to write. But, you know, we'll see. You never know. We never know as time goes on.
Well, let me just put in my two bits here, because what you have done in the last interview and this one I already as well, is you're willing to be vulnerable. You're willing to be honest and transparent, and you're willing to share some of those deep feelings. And to me, that's what people want to hear. That's what writing, that's why books talk to us. And so, you know, I wouldn't think of it that way, because what you're going through and what you're experiencing and just things you've shared in these interviews is very useful to people and is very intriguing. So don't sell yourself short on that. Now, writing a book is a discipline and hard thing to do, I can imagine. But don't think you don't have anything to say, because I think you have a lot to say.
Yeah, well thanks. You know, I like what you do. You're really good at it, first of all. And I always felt like I just had a natural curiosity about things and people. And I love to ask people questions and explore their thoughts and get good conversations going. So I don't know, if you ever need a sub for your podcast, you let me know, and I'll try to fill your shoes.
Well, that's good to know. And that's a great word too. I think people, I had a family member who we probably, couldn't be on more opposite sides of the political spectrum. And he said, you know, the one thing about it is, he said, I think you're a very curious person and I'm a very curious person. And so because of that, we can have these conversations, even though we don't agree on a lot of the issues. But we listen to each other, we try and learn from that, and it's that curiosity that enables us to do that, as opposed to this, you know, hard line, polarized, you know, crap that we just see all the time in our world right now. It's just annoying, you know. Open your minds a little bit, you know.
Steve, it's just exhausting, and I agree. I mean, I think if people had more curiosity and less anger and less tribalism, you know, it would be such a much better, peaceful, happier world. It's sad and it's disheartening, you know, that we've fallen this far apart. And, you know, I used to be pretty strident in my political opinions. I confess, you know, 8, 10, 12 years ago, I might have been the guy who was arguing, you know, with somebody about something. But just over the course of time, I was like, well, first of all, my arguments never changed anybody's mind about anything. If anything, it pushed them further away. And second of all, you know, it was very kind of intellectually unstimulating to be only listening and hearing to things that I agreed with. And I find it just, you know, very fascinating and very, very, you know, just intellectually fulfilling to really delve into kind of what people's opinions are who don't always agree with me. And I've learned a lot. And I don't know if I've changed my values or my kind of my position on things and a whole lot, but I'm certainly more, absolutely more patient and tolerant and curious and sympathetic to other viewpoints and that's been a really good maturity, you know, that I've come to, and that sounds like you have too.
Right, absolutely, and I think we're going through this right now with the racial issues that we're dealing with right now. I think people, you know, it's too bad it took what it took to get people to really stop and listen and say, geez, what is really going on here? Because we're having, you know, nationally those kind of discussions that I think people are starting to look and open their minds and see what has really gone on here and admit that there's more to it than maybe we had originally thought. So we got a lot to learn. So hopefully we can keep listening.
Yeah, exactly. I agree 1,000%.
What have you done over the last year that you don't think you would have done without this diagnosis?
Well, I've watched a crapload of TV.
Yeah, when the energy level's down, it's probably good to just lay on the couch and turn on the boob tube, right?
I've never been a big TV watcher. I was like sports on TV, watched a ton of golf and basketball and NASCAR and all those things I love, but you know, I've watched more miniseries and Family Guy reruns and stuff on Netflix than I probably want to admit to. I think that's it. That's as simple as that. There's nothing glamorous, Steve. I haven't done anything glamorous. I haven't done any skydiving or anything, you know, anything like that. Just a little too much TV.
Are you, again, I hope this isn't too personal a question to ask, but do you have a bucket list? Do you have things that are on that list that you want to try and do?
Yes, I've got a few things on there. You know, if I wasn't, you know, hung up with this diagnosis and, you know, the world was open for business, I think there are things we would have done already. I've never seen the Grand Canyon, believe it or not. Here I am, 58 years old, never seen the Grand Canyon. I flew over it once, saw it out my window, but I've never stood, you know, on the rim of the Grand Canyon. So, you know, that has been on my list. Actually, we had a trip planned back in May, Peggy and I, with my brother Jim and his wife, Marcia. We were going to go on a rafting trip down the Colorado River, an overnight, like a 3-night, you know, rafting trip down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon and so forth.
Yeah.
Camping, you know, on the side of the river. It wasn't really camping. I think it was like glamping, because you could ship cases of wine in and they would cook down for you and all that kind of stuff. That's my kind of camping.
Right. Me too.
Yeah. But, you know, that would have certainly been a wonderful trip, and that would have checked an item off our list. I think I've told you and maybe your podcasters before that I love NASCAR. So I wanted to go see NASCAR races at Talladega, a track I've never been to, one of the storied tracks in NASCAR. You know, I've never done that. So that would have been on my list. But, you know, Peggy and I, we're not really that complicated. We got a pretty simple life. We like to go out for nice dinners and, you know, enjoy, you know, sitting around the fireplace on the patio with our neighbors and hanging out with my family back in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And it's really that simple for us. So that's pretty much it. One thing that I am going to miss terribly is my daughter is a senior at Franklin Marshall College in Lancaster, and she plays on the volleyball team there. And their season was canceled about a week ago, their fall season.
Oh, so I'm
really going to miss that, because I love that sport. And, you know, it's really cool watching your kid play sports and, you know, making friends with all the parents of the other players and kind of growing up with them. And it's that kind of, that's a real bummer. She's been devastated by that. But anyway.
I forgot your family was so into volleyball and coaching and playing and all that. So, yeah, Gabby Reese was probably obviously a real pioneer in that sport as far as making it, front and center in the U.S.
Yeah, indeed, she was. It's a great player and just a great kind of role model and representative of the sport. So I really enjoyed that podcast that when you had her on and yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's amazing. Well, what's what are you looking for? I mean, obviously we're in a pandemic and trying to try and be as normal as we can be in this country, which isn't easy right now. But moving forward, how you doing? What's on your mind? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I think kind of more subjectively, what I'm looking forward to is, you know, one of the difficulties of there's many, and I've enumerated on several of them already with our talk today. But one of the things that is difficult is the struggle with relevance and meaning. I've always been not by design or not because I wanted to be, but just always kind of been sort of in a leadership role for whatever reason, maybe just because I was taller than most other people. I don't know. But, when you don't, I feel like, I don't have as much relevance anymore. And I'm looking for ways to, fill that void up. So I've been trying to do some more work with our private practice section group. I've done a couple little projects here and there the last few months, which is great. I love helping that group and love those people. And just that intersection of entrepreneurs and physical therapists, you just can't find better DNA and people, in my opinion, than those kind of people. So I've been trying to help out there to the extent that I can, and having a little more purpose there. At work, I don't know if you remember, but about 2 years ago, I more or less retired from kind of day-to-day running of my company, me and some of my partners. But we've been helping out now during the pandemic. It's just sort of been an all hands on deck approach during this. So that's been good to, have that purpose back. Now we're kind of giving the wheel back to the management team, and they're taking it right now. But I guess, I'm looking for things to do that have meaning and purpose and make a difference. And instead of kind of just laying around feeling, sick and sorry for myself and pessimistic, devoting some of my energies to doing something meaningful is I think what's next. I keep waiting though, Steve, for, all right, tomorrow I'm going to feel better and I'll be able to do it. And then tomorrow comes and maybe I'm not feeling that much better, or a little bit worse, or maybe a little bit better. And just like, I got to just figure out a way to kind of get out of my own way there and just do it and get that purpose and relevance and meaning and even distraction into life, so it's not just kind of not consumed with this medical condition all the time.
Well, I can only imagine how difficult that must be, but if anyone can do it, I'm sure it's you. But you make a good point with the relevance thing. When I retired, people said, are you afraid to retire? And that was kind of my response too. Was my biggest fear is, how soon will I be irrelevant? because you've been in these roles for a long time, and you get energy off that, and it is a concern. So, I think it's a question that we all deal with a little bit at our stage of our careers. And it's kind of funny because my father's 87 years old. He'll be 88 in September. And the last time I met with him, he said, could you help me with something? And I said, sure, Dad, what do you need? He goes, well, what can I do? I need to do something that's purposeful. And I'm like, geez, Dad, you're 87 years old. It's okay to just, hang out. But even at that age, he's still wanting to do something that he feels is relevant and purposeful, and I get it. It's something that makes us feel more human, I think. So
yeah, that's makes you feel alive, and living is It's not just mere biological existence. There's all this other richness in terms of relationships and purpose and meaning and helping other people that are really what makes it what it is. So what have you done to address that with you, Steve, your relevance?
Well, it is something that I was concerned about and I question sometimes. But luckily, I have this podcast as my hobby that I love to do. My wife teases me that I spend more time on it than probably anything, and it's just something that I love. And I also do executive coaching, and just like you, working with those professionals that are running companies and trying to make their businesses successful and relevant, and especially through this pandemic and so on, gives me a lot of joy and makes me feel like I'm helping them contribute in a way that helps them. So those are things I'm doing, but it is a question, it is a question in your mind that am I doing enough? Am I doing something that matters? I think it's a very common thing that we all deal with every day.
I can imagine for someone like you too, because your company TAI was a big company. I mean, that's one of the biggest in the country, and you ran that for I don't know how many years, a long time. And boy, to step away from that, that's got to be a big hole to fill, because I'm sure you had just constant pressure and people and to manage and all the rest of it, and to step out of that had to be a challenge.
Yeah, it was. And I think the biggest thing was you go from one day to knowing everything, or you think you do, and to the next day knowing nothing. You have no idea what's going on about the people, about the business. And yeah, that was a little hard to adjust to. But, life is good, though. I'm doing fine. We live in a beautiful part of the world. We have a beautiful place to, I feel guilty sometimes having to see what people are having to go through during these tough times, and my life is pretty easy in comparison. So no complaints from here.
Yeah, well, you're a good man.
Hey, I was thinking too. I was teasing Mike Horsfield and Kristen as well, Kristen Wilson, about that the three of us are probably the biggest crybabies in PPS. And you told me last time we talked that you just had those tears coming all the time. Has that changed? You still have those teary days, or are you doing better with that?
That's almost a daily occurrence. And my poor wife is usually the recipient of those. I can usually make it through the day, holding it together. But then, at night, when you say goodnight and you turn the lights off, and you're just there with your thoughts, and there's only one other person in the room with you, it's hard not to get sad and cry, the emotions they're deep, and they are right below the surface all the time, and they're raw, and the sadness is the one that's just overwhelming sometimes. But, there's also days when I just want to break stuff. I mean, it's like you're so goddamn angry. Like, why me? And then you're frustrated. And then you pile onto that, this relevance issue that we spoke about earlier. And, the feeling of physically not feeling well, just accentuates all of those other feelings. And so it's, you're just like sort of whipsawed by this these wild swings all the time.
Yeah, well, I can only imagine. And Jeff, getting back to the relevance thing, I mean, the fact that you're willing to come on this program and share those deep feelings with the listeners, and willing to just share that is so relevant, in the sense that we learn from that. We it can help someone in the future that maybe is going to have to go through a similar thing, or maybe has gone through something in the past. So don't sell yourself short on the relevance. I think I couldn't wait to get you back on again, because your willingness to go in these areas is unusual. It's unique. And we that listen to this benefit from it. So thank you so much for being willing to go there. And you know, you're a hero, you're a role model, you're someone that we look up to. So don't ever sell yourself short, because you've already made a huge relevance to so many of us.
Really grateful to hear that, Steve. And so grateful you asked me to do this again. I couldn't say yes fast enough, to be honest with you. And then I thought, uh-oh, what did I just commit to doing? Because I know Steve, and he's going to ask me some tough questions. But I was, you know, I just really wanted to a chance to share and talk. And hopefully, I think you nailed it. You know, just if this can be helpful to anybody, even in a small way, I would feel really good about that. I don't even know if there's maybe some professional lessons in here for people. I don't know, but if it helps that part of it too, then that's even better.
Well, let's make a deal. Let's make a pact that we're going to do this again down the road, and just keep sharing your journey so that we can all learn from it. And again, I appreciate your willingness to go where you have, and your willingness to be a part of this. So, Jeff, can't thank you enough for being on the show today. Thank you.
Thanks again, Steve. You're a good man, and love what you're doing, and I'm proud to be a friend of yours.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.